Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome everybody to All Sides Weekend. This is The Book Show, which is a t-shirt, by the way. We need to have t-shirts made up. This is The Book Show. There is no book show without Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog, which is important to anyone who loves to read, is thelongestchapter.com. Chris Hickey is here. She is the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Library, and she is here with quick picks every month, those books everybody wants to read. And I'm going to ask you to tell us a little story about, just a little précis of what's going on at the library these days. And thank goodness Brian Lohr is here from Cover to Cover Books for Children. Brian is going to just bring us joy, happiness, and things to talk about with books for children. So thank you all for coming. And Brian, we all need a smile and a lift, and you often bring that with you when you come on the show. So what do you have for children to read today over at Cover to Cover?
Well, we have all sorts of wonderful books to read. I'm starting off this morning with a Will Hildebrand, Summer is Here. So today is the official start of summer, and we thought nothing better than a brand new Will Hildebrand book. He is an Ohio author and illustrator. He does a wonderful job through Baron Mole stories, and this one is no different. It's just a wonderfully illustrated celebration of summer. In this case, you have Mole, who's learning how to play t-ball, and there are these beautiful spreads in here where you have then Mole going for a home run, and it's swish, swish, swish. You hear him hitting the ball, and it says, "Summer is here," proclaimed Mole. "I'm swinging for the fences." "You're a natural," said Bear. And it's just that affirmational, beautiful story. I love every second of it. Again, Will Hildebrand is a Cincinnati author and illustrator. We have him at our store maybe once a year, and we just love to host him because he is just a natural with children.
Brings lots of smiles. What age for that book?
Yeah, so this book is considered 3 to 6. And again, that's Summer is Here, a Bear and Mole story by Will Hildebrand.
Cover to Cover is a great place to go for children's books. They have a lot going on in the store. And Brian Lohr is the manager of the store and comes on the show when we can get him to talk about children's literature. And we'll have a lot to say as school is out. The summer is officially here. And if you want the kids to do something, give them a book. And Brian will tell you how to do that. Cassie Rose is our book critic, and I think we all need, especially these days, as summer gets, everything gets hots up, we need some good reads.
Well, I've got a great one that came out about a week or so ago by Jess Walter. It's called So Far Gone. Many people might remember him from The Beautiful Ruins, which was a book that I thought was a sleeper. Not many people saw it, but it was but became a bestseller. And this one, So Far Gone, is just, it is fun, it is funny, it is smart, and yet it also has adventure with it. And it stars an ex-journalist who's gone off-grid. He is just tired of the stupidity in his family, the stupidity in the world, and it all starts at a Thanksgiving family dinner where he's decided he's going to be okay with his conspiracy theorist, apocalyptic Christian son-in-law. He's not going to act out, but he can't hold himself. And he does, and he sucker punches the guy and ends up driving away, throws his cell phone out the window, and goes to a concrete cabin in the woods that used to be the sheep farm of his grandfather. So then it is 7 years later when the book opens. And
he stays there for 7 years.
7 years, and, you know, electricity comes from car batteries. I think there are propane tanks there, whatever. So anyway, hears a knock on the door, and there are his two grandchildren who he for a moment doesn't recognize. And they have a note from their mother, Bethany, that says she's gone. He needs to take care of them. So nobody knows where she is. So he bucks up immediately and takes the two of them to a friend of his in a car that he calls, it's a hybrid. And what does he call it? He says it's half something, half garbage, you know, and so he throws the kids in and they go. He goes to a friend's, it cleans him up, and he takes him to his grandson's chess tournament that afternoon, only to find that Brother Dean and his sidekick that are packing heat have shown up to come and get the kids because the father who is Shane, has come, wants them to be taken care of by the church while he's looking for Bethany. So now we have a showdown in the parking lot. But meanwhile, you know, this guy, you know, Reese Kinnick is, he's been a hermit for 7 years. So one of the things, like, he doesn't remember how to use a cell phone. And so he's not, and also he'll talk out loud because he's used to talking to himself, but he's not realizing that these are the thoughts in his head and he's not supposed to be saying them out loud. So there's this humor in the book that, you know, is very much present. But at the same time, there's this adventure. And what happens is, I won't give all the details, but he ends up in this pickup truck with an ex-detective who is like, yeah, let's go get him. And, you know, just driving like a maniac squirrel on this highway to Idaho, because all this is taking place in Oregon and Idaho, and to get the kids. It's just a great read. I mean, you laugh, and at the same time, though, Jess Walter is making some points, which are very, you're laughing about them, kind of along the lines of Percival Everett when he did In the Trees.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it, where you're laughing, but you're getting what the point is. It's really delightful. It does have, I will warn you, a shocking end. I mean, to the point where I, like, gasped out loud. But I would say this is definite for a beach read, definite for the pool, definite if you just really want a good book.
So Far Gone by Jess Walters. Mm-hmm. You had me when he threw the phone out the window. That you had me there, you know.
Yes, and that's one of the points he makes. I think Jess Walter in that, because all through the book, he'll make a comment about saying how, making comments like the cell phone is just an annoying bartender, or other comments. I mean, you can tell the cell phone irritates him.
Well, that is a recommendation for Cassie Rose. If you want to laugh and lay by the pool or lay in the AC and throw your cell phone out the window, this book is for you. Cassie Rose, thank you very much for that. Chris Hickey, you just like made my day because you brought in a quick pick by one of my favorite authors that I didn't know we had a new book out, so I need to get out more. Discuss.
All right, Wally Lamb. So he is coming to the Columbus Book Festival, which is in just a few weeks. Yes, he is. He's one of our headliners. He's going to be there on Saturday. So if you would like to see Wally Lamb, get a book signed, you will want to go to our website and get a virtual ticket. Now,
Baloney.
There isn't a cost.
I'm crashing. Never mind.
That's okay. I think you'll be allowed. I think
and
that's fine.
And the fest is July 12th through the 13th.
Correct. Right? July 12th through the 13th. So Wally Lamb is one of our headliners, and his new book is called The River is Waiting. This was just named as an Oprah Book Club pick, and this is his third time being chosen by her. So in 1997, his first book, She's Come Undone, was chosen by her, and that made him a literary star. And this is his first novel in 10 years,
yeah,
so
it's
it
been
has
a while.
Been a while.
Yeah.
And he mines his own experience with addiction, with alcohol, to write this story. And he talked about in his interviews that he had imposter syndrome because he became famous so quickly and he felt like he didn't deserve that. And so the alcohol would numb for him. So he talks about, he uses that to write this story. So his character's name is Corby. And Corby is, you know, his marriage is in shambles. He just lost his job and he's a new father and he is harboring a secret addiction. And then there's a tragedy takes place with his son that lands him in prison for 3 years. This is a heavy, heavy book. But Wally Lamb, he writes his characters with so much care that Corby will be unlikable at first. But as you exist in his mind, as things are happening, your perception might change. So Wally Lamb has published two memoirs of short stories from women at a prison in Connecticut. So there's lots of experience. That is a passion project for him.
He's been teaching there for years.
Yes.
I guess. Yeah.
And he's very good at that. His characters discover the truths about themselves. There is, self-forgiveness that takes place. And this ending will hit you like you've run into a brick wall. It's an intense book, but also hopeful. So it's heavy, but hopeful. And if you're a fan of Wally Lamb, you're going to like this one. It's really good. And when I first read him, I was talking about this before. I thought he was a woman because he writes women so well. He's like he Grady Hendrix that can write women so well. You don't know how they do it. And I assumed that Wally was a woman. This was back in 1997 before I knew better. But yes, Wally Lamb, The River is Waiting, it is a quick pick, so you'll want to grab a copy. Also, claim your spot to see him at the Columbus Book Festival. You can do that through our website.
Just review again the dates and where the festival is.
The festival will be taking place at Main Library on Grant Avenue, and it will be July 12th through 13th.
Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday.
And there are huge tents out on the lawn.
It's really gigantic.
And every corner of the building has people.
Every corner of the building, there's going to be expansion. We've moved where our book sale is going to be to give that more space. We sold every single book in the book sale last year.
I believe that.
So they've expanded it, so there's more room to move around and get things.
And for the last two summers, it rained on the Sunday.
Let's hope it doesn't.
But that didn't stop the crowds.
It sure didn't.
It really didn't stop the crowds. It can be hot this Sunday, so just...
It's always hot. Bring a fan, dress for it. It's good. Yes. But we are going to be selling beverages so that there will be lots of cool drinks that you can purchase that will help fund the book festival in the future.
The library. Chris Hickey is the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Library, and she comes to us every month with quick picks. Just quickly review what those are. Quick picks.
Quick picks are the very popular books that you might be on the hold list, you know, with like 800 long hold list, but you can walk into one of our buildings and we have a display, and if you see that, you can check it out and you can skip the line.
Quick picks at the Columbus Library, and we have time before a break to ask Brian Lohr what makes a good children's book, depending on the ages, of course, and then give us another recommendation.
Absolutely. So what makes a great children's book is anything that can be, at least in my personal opinion, read aloud that engages not just yourself, but an entire audience. It has to have a quick hook. It has to go drive deeply within the story, and it has to make you care. So those are my main criteria for a great children's book, regardless of the age.
When you talk about children's books, when you read to children, which I know you do, how young is young?
Just born.
Okay. Well.
In the womb?
Yeah, all right.
I mean, our family was reading in the womb, and I encourage that to others as well. It allows you to find your voice as well. So,
give us another recommendation.
So for those armchair travelers, or maybe those that are traveling, we have an incredible series called Earth's Incredible Places. They do quite a few different places across the U.S. and the world. The one that I brought in today is called Yellowstone. And another one that they do, which is another place here in the U.S., then they also do Grand Canyon. Those are two just absolutely beautiful books. The construction of the book, if you could feel this book, you could put your fingers over the top of the cover, you would feel the nice embossing. The illustrations make it look like it's from the 60s, but in a very good way. As you turn it open and you look at the different sections of the book, it's geared for ages, I would say 8, more likely 10 and up. You learn about the indigenous people of the area. You also learn about the history. You also learn geological facts. It is great for that curious kid. And again, that's called Earth's Incredible Places. That's the series. This one's called Yellowstone. Excuse me. Again, best for ages 10 and up. They do the Grand Canyon, Everest, Amazon River, Great Barrier Reef. Just an awesome series put out by Flying Eye Books.
Recommendation from Brian Lohr and his good colleagues at Cover to Cover, the children's bookstore in Upper Arlington. Brian comes to us again when we can get him to talk about what's great in children's literature. Cassie Rose is here, WO is his book critic. She's about to give us another recommendation. And Chris Hickey with quick picks from the Columbus Library. We are back very quickly. Don't go away.
Summer is here. Join WOSU at family-friendly community events and festivals all summer long. For all dates and locations, visit our events page, wosu.org/events.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
We are back, All Sides Weekend. This is the book show. I'm Christopher Purdy with Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library, with Brian Lohr from Cover to Cover Books, and Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. If Cassie Rose tells you to read a book, trust me, read the book. What do you have for us to read now?
I have a book with a wonderful title. It's called, bless you, Under the Feet of Jesus. And it's by Helena Maria Vermontes. And it was written in 1995. And it is about a migrant family working the farm fields in California. And one of the things that's wonderful about this book is the extraordinary imagery. It makes you really know and feel what it's like to be working in the fields in California in the summer under the hot sun. And it starts out with a station wagon of a family pulling up to a bungalow. There are seven of them, a woman and her five children, and then a 70-year-old man. And they go into the bungalow. It's two rooms. They fix it up. And they're there to work the grape fields and have the foreman come in the morning, and they get on the truck and go out to the fields. But again, the thing is I want to emphasize about this is the imagery here and how real this author makes that feel, because there's this one moment when they're in the grape fields and they're it's a 13-year-old girl named Estrella, and her little brother comes up, and he almost has sunstroke in a way, and she puts him under the grapevine and to cool him off and gives him water, and then stands up, and she looks down this path where she has created the frames and the newspaper and then a frame and then putting the grapes in it. And this long, it's almost like a highway, and then she looks ahead to her for the long emptiness ahead where she has to keep working. And it's... the imagery is stunning. The atmosphere is like almost poetic, and yet it's a very harsh reality. And that's kind of this magic of the book, because you get drawn into it, but at the same time, you're recognizing, you know, the hand-to-mouth existence. Now, again, I want to emphasize this was written in 1995, so it's not our current issues going on today. Two of the main characters are Estrella, this teenage girl who is with the family, but also a boy named Alejo. And he and his cousin work the fields. They're alone. They don't have family. But they also are thieves. So they go into the peach trees at night and they steal the peaches, fill their bags, and sell them on the roads. Well, the dramatic turn comes when Alejo is out stealing. And it is during the daytime. And the airplane comes by to spray the pesticide. So he gets covered in the pesticide. And so that dramatically changes because of what happens to him and the girl, Estrella, who helps and to come in and save him. It's really just, it's a stunning book. I came across it when I was going through, once again, the great American books that The Atlantic magazine had put out. And I'm looking kind of at the books in the 20th century that I might have missed or I just didn't recognize. And this is one of them. I never... knew about it. And so it caught my interest, and it is truly a beautiful book, and it's done so well in under 20 pages.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's a small book.
It's a small book, but it's a lovely book, and that's part of it being a gem. So I highly recommend it. It's called Under the Feet of Jesus, and that title is that what the mother comes from, where the mother tells the daughter, Estrella, she says, you are an American citizen. You were born here. And she said, your birth certificate is under the feet of Jesus, which is a statue in their bungalow.
That's a recommendation from Cassie Rose. That's prescient right now, and thank you for that. This is All Sides Weekend. This is the book show, and Chris Hickey, who's here with the Columbus Library, and brings us quick picks. What's quick? What's hot now?
Taylor Jenkins Reid has a new book out, and she is famous for Daisy Jones and the Six, Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, and this new one is called Atmosphere, a Love Story, and I started my day crying over the ending of this book. So I finished it this morning, and it is just beautiful. And I like it as much as Evelyn Hugo. So this is a really good one. So it's about a woman named Joan. This takes place in the 1980s, and she is one of the first women to join the space shuttle program at NASA. So we get a lot of really good NASA stuff in here. So when we meet Joan, she is running Capcom during a mission. Now, what that person is in the control room is the person that speaks directly to the astronauts. There's only one voice they hear when they are in space, and it is this person. An accident happens during a spacewalk. And what nobody else knows is that Joan is desperately in love with one of the people on the space shuttle. So then Jenkins Reid takes us from that point to another point in the story. And she does this really well in her books. Like, she sets it up and then takes us to another point in time to show us how we got there. And she's really good at that sprinkling as we go. So it takes us back to where Joan finds out that she's been accepted into this NASA program. She's has this camaraderie of this class, and she starts to have feelings for another person, feelings that she's never had before and doesn't fully understand what's happening until she does. It's just so good. Taylor Jenkins Reid likes to write about women thriving in male-dominated spaces. So Daisy Jones, Carrie Soto, and now Joan. And, I'm sorry. I'm just like flustered even just thinking about that. She was in the mood to write a sweeping grand love story, and she did. So it's beautiful. There's so much connection and emotional intelligence between Joan and this person that she loves, and it is absolutely beautiful. But also, if you're interested in space, she did a lot of research. So she talked to one of the longest-serving flight directors of NASA. So he weighed in on a lot of technical things. So we learn a lot about how, you know, she jumps out of planes, lands in the ocean and has to, like, figure out how to get out from under the parachute and into a raft. So there's lots of survival and just fascinating things. She also read books about Sally Ride and Judy Resnick. And so it's like, if you're really interested in that, and I am, that I just loved it. And this ending, like, she doesn't do the easy endings, and it's just so good. And it is a little bit gut-wrenching. And I had a huge emotional response to it, because Joan doesn't know who she is until she does. And it's just beautiful.
It has an easy title, Atmosphere.
Atmosphere. And if you look at the cover, like, it feels like, Judy Resnick standing with wind in her hair. You know, we always saw her so coiffed. I just feel like, you know, she's wearing aviator. You see the reflection of the space shuttle in it. And it's just, this was an excellent, excellent read.
Is it is there a long line?
There's a big long. Yeah, there's always a long line for her, but you can grab it at in the Quick Pick if you're lucky.
The new Quick Picks are put out on Tuesdays.
Tuesdays are release days.
At every branch.
At every branch. Every branch has the same titles.
So get there early on a Tuesday if you want to pick up a copy of Atmosphere, which is recommended to us by Chris Hickey.
Well, and for something like a book like that where it was hugely popular, is it best to get there when the door is open?
Yeah, because we'll put them out when they come out. So this one's already been out for a week, and so it's gone. It will pop in and out. As people read it, they bring it back. We put it on the shelf. It gets snagged. So
I see what you're saying. So someone could be bringing it back in the middle of the day and putting it on the shelf, and then someone walks it. Got it.
Okay. Yeah. So you just never know what's going to be on the shelf when you come in.
The shelves replenish.
As soon as they check in, we put them back. So it's just a constant.
So they don't sit on the
They do not sit on the carts. Yeah. We get those right out.
Hence the title, Quick Picks from the Columbus Library. Brian Lohr, give us some more children. Give us a couple of titles of children's literature, something lovely for us.
Absolutely. Well, I have two award-winning authors that I wanted to highlight today. One being Margaret Peterson Haddix, who has written just an incredible trilogy mystery series. The series is called Mysteries of Trash and Treasure. And Natalie D. Richards, who is, again, another award-winning author for 49 Miles Alone. These two authors are going to be together over at the Columbus Metropolitan Library on August 5th. We're very excited about that. And we're also excited that the Columbus Metropolitan Library is partnering with Battelle to give away free books while they last on August 5th for these two authors. But Let's start with Margaret Peterson Haddix. Again, this the trilogy is under the Mysteries of Trash and Treasure. The newest one, the third one that's rounding this out, is called The Stolen Key. The trilogy starts off with Colin and Nevaeh. They are two children of rival trash companies. One is like the king of trash, the king of junk. The other one is kind of like a Marie Kondo type, where you're downsizing and you're trying to find your balance in life. Well, these two, as they're cleaning out at two different times, find these a stash of letters written in the late 70s, 80s, and it reveals all these really interesting movements that are going on at the time, whether that be women's liberation or many others at that time. And it just unravels so uniquely, and Margaret Peterson Haddix is just a treasure of an author who will sprinkle throughout these little clues throughout, and it always keeps the reader engaged. And then, and again, she'll be in conversation with Natalie D. Richards. Both of them won the Edgar Award, the 2025 Edgar Award for Mystery this year. Now, that The Stolen Key, The Mysteries of Trash and Treasure trilogy, that's meant for an 8 to 12-year-old, whereas Natalie's books are typically, not always, but typically meant for a young adult, which is usually 13 and up. And she wrote 49 Miles Alone that won the Edgar Award this year. And so you have these two cousins, Katie and Aster, and they are in the wilds of Utah. They're hiking. It's desert. It's hot. It's intense. And you come across their backstory. And that backstory starts to reveal all sorts of tensions between these cousins. Well, they find themselves in a freak storm. They find illness. There's injury. And then all of a sudden they're stranded. There's a couple that comes along, and that couple is meant to basically save them, but then they have their own problems. So one night, they see the woman being chased after the man. The next morning, they're nowhere to be found. And so are they going to be able to save themselves? Are they going to be able to save the woman that they just met? Just an excellent story. The pull quote from this is fantastic, from author Kit Frick. It says, "crackles with tension in desert heat." So really just two amazing authors that you have the chance to meet on August 5th.
Recommendations from Brian Lohr, who is an expert on literature for kids and young people. Anything from the cradle to off to college,
that's right.
Cover to cover. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books, and I want to hear what Cassie Rose has to say as well.
Well, I think I'll share this book that was sort of in, out of character pick for myself, but and which I absolutely loved. I am not a Sherlockian, I picked up Bonnie McBird's new book. She writes about Sherlock and Watson. And I...
Oh, I thought you were going to choose a dirty book with that.
No, I read
really
it, but I said it wasn't
okay.
My thing.
Yeah, all right, never mind.
No, it's... So you have Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson here. So, and she's written... I mean, this is her sixth one. One, two, three. The first one, Art in the Blood or Art of the Blood? Art in the Blood is what it is. Was a phenomenal bestseller. And I'll tell you, I got totally lost in this book. This one is called The Serpent Under. It's her new one this year. And again, the reason I sort of turned to it is, one, because Michael Derda, who is a Sherlockian, he was a longtime book critic for The Washington Post, and he blurbed it, and I also heard that I read somewhere that he had read the book. And also, I had watched the PBS series. Now, this was probably last year with
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Thank you. He is Holmes. And so I had this visual of him and his Watson. So this book is about, you know, it opens with, you know, Watson and Holmes at, you know, 221B Baker Street, and a street, I won't say an urchin, but she's one of their informers, comes in, is telling them that she has found there is a boy that was drowned in the river, and the police are sort of dismissing it because he was just a street urchin and a thief and whatever. And she says, no, you need to pay attention to this because he was one of your irregulars, which are the informers for Holmes and for Watson, who work the streets. And they're saying, okay, and on this, we'll look into this. And meanwhile, a royal coach pulls up in front of Baker Street, and they are being called to come to Windsor Castle because Queen Victoria wants them to investigate the case of a girl who has been found dead in a Windsor Castle. Now, what is very strange and odd about this is that the girl has a phenomenal tattoo that has been created on her face and her up to her forehead of two entwined snakes. And it is so fantastically done that only a brilliant tattooist would be able to do it. Well, of course, there's the question of what happened. She was missing for a couple days. So the thing is, though, is Holmes and Watson come into this, and is so typically Holmes and Watson, the way, you know, they're saying, no, you have to go with royal protocol. But Holmes is like, he ignores everything. And that's what I loved about the book. He gets fast paced. It's the dialogue between the two, how she creates Holmes and Watson very well, and how you get that dynamic of the duo and the way that his brilliance dominates, really, to basically say to everyone, get out of my way, you're stupid, I know what I'm doing. Queen Victoria has asked me to do this. So there's then another element that comes in when they begin on this case too, and then another element comes in where it is a feminist activist, and she seeks their help because someone is undermining her demonstrations. And a woman who is part of her group, you could say, is a sister of the woman who was murdered. So it's really it's an intriguing kind of, I don't want to say it's a page turner, it's just one that you just get involved with because it is so brilliant, so smart, you don't know what is going on, and it does. Now, I'm saying this, I'm not a Sherlockian, so if someone is that's listening, you know, who's probably rolling their eyes, you know, I want to say that to me, it feels like a perfect, I don't know what you would call it, are they adaptations, or that where someone takes, you know, it's historical fiction, that kind of thing? Anyway, it's another great summer read if you
want. Who's the author again?
Her name is Bonnie McBird, MacBird. And I would certainly say that if that plot line doesn't interest you, look at her other books, especially probably the first one called Art in the Blood.
She's continuing the Sherlock Holmes characterizations 120 years later. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yeah, she is. And from what I could tell, she's doing it really well.
That's a recommendation from Cassie Rose here on The Book Show. I'm Christopher Purdy. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Public Radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to wosu.org/protect.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
We are back. This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy with Brian Lohr from Cover to Cover Books for Kids with Cassie Rose, who is OSU's book critic. Cassie's blog is thelongestchapter.com, and Chris Hickey from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. And you've got a new quick pick for us.
Yes. Nikki Ehrlich has a new book. And Nikki Ehrlich, several years ago, wrote a book that that we loved, Christopher.
We did.
It was called The Measure, and it was the book where people find a box with a string in it, and that measures the length of their life. So her new book, if you're a fan of the show Severance or you liked that movie Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, you will like this one. It's about grief, and it's about the stages of grief. So in this novel, there is a clinic called the Poppy Fields. That's the name of the book, where patients can sleep away the stages of grief. So they're in immense pain. They go to this clinic, and they put them under. And when they wake up, they are in the acceptance stage. So heavy, heavy book in that. But we
you must be a lot of laughs in the summer. Let me.
It's hopeful too. So
yeah.
There's three points of view that are the main characters. Sasha wants to go through the sleep herself. There's a man named Ray. He's a firefighter, and his brother went through the procedure and died shortly after. He was also a firefighter, and he wants to go there because they have some explaining to do. And then a woman named Ava also wants to go there because she believes that her sister is there. So the three of them meet at the airport, and the flight is canceled to go to California. And so they decide to share the last rental car that's available. It's this yellow jalopy. So they go on this road trip cross country to get to this place. And it is very much a character driven road trip type of story. And Nikki Ehrlich is really good at developing characters and giving us just little nuggets along the way, just like she did in The Measure, where you're like, oh, this is why. Oh, wow, this is really why. So you get that step. She took the road trip herself to prepare to write this. So some of her experiences and things that she mm-hmm. saw show up in the book. Another point of view character is Ellis, and she is the scientist behind this this sleep procedure. So we get her perspective, which is interesting.
Do they fall asleep and then just wake up, or is there, I mean, like,
they don't really go into what that is. This is really more about the people on their way to that. They don't really explain the science behind it. But yes, the idea is there's a room full of people, they're on these beds, and they are in a coma-like state. And
so you fall asleep and then you wake up.
And then you wake up like a month later. Like you're asleep for maybe a month to 2 months.
But you don't know. It doesn't take you through what happened during the sleep.
It doesn't. Okay. So she doesn't go into that detail. But mm-hmm. with a percentage of people that go through it, there's this very disturbing side effect. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. You will have to read it. It's not something you want to happen. So it's really like, it's not a plot driven book like her other one. It is very much a character study of why these people want to go there and what they are going through, and they're able to process a lot of feelings and talk to each other on this road trip. And this is going to be a good one for a book club, because people need to think about, like, what would you do if, and you know, I don't know, I read this and I thought about this and I don't know what I would do if in that position. So this is The Poppy Fields by Nikki Ehrlich, and it is a really good read.
What was The Measure was the other book that you and I talked
about. The Measure was the other book of hers. I think that came out in 22.
I don't recall that was a depressing book, The Measure. There was some element.
And this is
of,
not, de- yeah. yeah, it's like there's hopefulness.
That's exactly right,
and there's
right,
like
yes.
discussion as these people are, they find hope in themselves as they're trying to figure out, because they all have their different reasons and their different motivations for wanting to travel to the Poppy Fields.
That's a recommendation from Chris Hickey. Brian Lohr, make us smile. Come on.
Well, talking about hopefulness and a journey, there's a really beautiful book out right now called Some of Us, A Story of Citizenship in the United States. It's written by Newbery honoree Rajani LaRocca and illustrated by Woy Van Lee. And it has a beautiful hugging family. It has the Statue of Liberty in the background. And this is a very personal story for LaRocca in the sense that she herself then gained citizenship here at the U.S. There are these beautiful spreads, and it goes into all sorts of different reasons why families might be coming here looking for citizenship. It also highlights all sorts of luminaries like Ian Pei, Rihanna, and others that have also gained citizenship. So it's just a really beautifully lyrical book. It ends so beautifully as well. It goes like this. Some of us are born to it. Some of us choose. And we are all American. It's really powerful. It's a really beautiful book. Has some great back matter about the story about La Roca, and some other great back matter as well. That's meant for typically an age 3 and up. I would probably put it a little bit closer to 4 and up. Again, that's Some of Us, A Story of Citizenship in the United States.
Having looked through that, thanks to you, that would make a nice gift.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you have a little child in your life, that would make a lovely gift, I would think.
Yeah, and we have it on display with other 4th of July books as well.
Over at Cover to Cover.
Yes, that's right.
Which you are the manager, correct?
Yeah, yes. A manager and owner.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that. You are the owner, yes. We congratulated you last time you were here. Well, we'll do it again. And Cassie Rose, we've had Sherlock Holmes. We've had we actually had a happy book from you, which was great. Mm-hmm. Now what? Are we going to get depressed again? Come on.
I don't think so, but I am going to go nonfiction at this point. And it's called A Perfect Turmoil. And I think the subtitle really sort of introduces it. The subtitle is Walter E. Fernald and the Struggle to Care for America's Disabled.
Fernald, yes, Massachusetts.
Yes, yes. So this is, it's by Alex Green. And Fernald was, I would say, he is considered to be one of the first to have introduced special education. He saw the intellectually and developmentally disabled as people. The children as people. And back in 1887, that wasn't going on at a South Boston school that was very overcrowded public school for these individuals. Well, he was made the superintendent and he changed things and he introduced the special education. And it was in such a way that, I mean, he was very innovative. So world experts were coming to learn from him. And he was a very, very humane man. And he, you know, cared about the kids. He would every night walk through the hall and say goodnight to them. So one of the things is that he was doing also is that he built a new campus that was out in Waverly, Massachusetts. That opened in 1905. And before they moved out to there, it was something happened at the South Boston location, and that is two girls drowned another he didn't want to call them patients, but two girls that were at the South Boston school. And they drowned her in a bathtub. And he realized that at this point that for the intellectually and developmentally disabled, that they may need to consider a criminal instinct that perhaps could be at play. So he got involved with the courts. Now, there is the thing about Walter Fernald is that he was very idealistic and very humane, but he did change course and go down a path that was not that. So his story is both very humane, but also horrific. And then actually he goes back to being humane, which is part of the story. So he's working with the court system in terms of like mass institutionalization or segregation. But also at this time is that the eugenicists had a burgeoning movement. Now we're looking at about 1910, 1911. And he was hesitant, but he got drawn into it. And so when you're reading this book, there is a lot of information, a lot of people, a lot of facts. But the thing is that Alex Green writes so well. I just kept wanting to come back to it, wanting to come back. And because of how good this book is and how well it's written. And also because I think, you know, the purpose here is, and Alex Green points this out, he says, the thing is that Fernald realized he had made a mistake, that he had gone too far left of center, and he admitted it, and he said, this is wrong, and which nobody would do back then, none of the experts would, and was brave enough to do that and to then begin again to get back on a better course, and he vilified the eugenicists. So that's one part of that's a big part of his story. But also what it helps to tell is how complex it is in being able to understand the needs of the developmentally disabled, that it is so complex that you can make a decision that maybe it isn't the right decision, but you have to be bold enough then to admit to that. And also it comes in the end, there's very much what I took away was that you have to be involved with the families and you have to be involved with the individuals. It can't just be authorities that are making their decisions, like the eugenicists were, for example, or I don't know, there were maybe some political authorities there, and they were not involved. They were in connection with Fernald and maybe some of authorities, but they didn't talk with the families. They didn't know the kids like Fernald did. And you come away from that understanding, you know, how important that is, and also, again, the complexity of understanding what is at play here. It's really a well-done book, very well done.
What's the title?
It's called A Perfect Turmoil, Walter E. Fernald and the Struggle to Care for America's Disabled. He died in 1924. His story was not, well, it got buried, quite frankly. The author had to sift through more than 250,000 files that were unarchived and were difficult to get to. And he's brought the story out here, and he's done it very well.
The institution that bears his name, I know, was functioning as I was growing. I grew up in the area, mm-hmm. so I knew the. I don't know
the
if
one
they
in
still
Waverly.
Are. Yeah, I yeah, mm-hmm. and yes, and I don't know if it's still there, but it was there. You know, in the last 30 or 40 years, it was still there. Yes.
Well, it did, and unfortunately, it got a bad name,
yes,
too.
Yes, it did.
And
it got
he
a very
did,
bad
too.
Name. Yeah.
And that's where what happened when his story, you know, just it got buried in his name was then misused in a
way.
It
was in the news a lot, not for good reasons.
Not for,
many
yes.
years ago when I was young.
and this author doesn't hide that.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I said, it is a, he was a very humane man, but his story also has a horrific part of it.
We are really running a range here. Cassie Rose has given us a beach book. She's given us books really to think about that really will provoke us. Chris Hickey's bringing us the best of what's new. And Brian Lohr brings us joy and wonderful books for kids from cover to cover. Give us another quick pick, Chris Hickey.
Are we ready for a romance?
Okay, yes.
Yes.
All right.
All right. Yes. A mildly spicy romance, a little bit spicy. So this is Ashley Poston. Her new book is called Sounds Like Love. And what she does is her romances have some magical realism in it. So her last book, The 7 Year Slip, one of the characters lives 7 years in the past. Don't ask why. That's not why you're reading these books. Don't look for an explanation. So in this book, the romance takes place over telepathy. So there's a woman named Joni. She is a successful songwriter. She's really stressed out about writing the next big hit. So she goes home where her family has a music venue, and she starts hearing this voice in her head of a man, and he's a hot man. Why? How do we know this? Don't ask, just read it. So this man, she starts hearing this melody in her head, and it's not something that she's come up with. So it turns out this voice belongs to a real man, an ex boy band, who's now kind of like the artist Hozier, and he has a man bun to go with it. So it's just all very fun. Anyway, they've determined that in order to get, she's also in his head, and neither of them like this, and they determine that they need to write this song together to get out of each other's heads. Now, they're very vulnerable with each other, which you kind of have to be if someone's poking around in your brain. So they're having this relationship that they've never really had before. So it's there, that romance comes up. This is a book for music lovers. So if you really like music, there's a lot to geek out about in this book. Again, it's a romance. It's magical realism. Just go in and read it and enjoy it. Don't look for why and how.
Okay, I'm stuck on the man bun. Like if
a man bun. A man bun is a thing. So this singer has like a lot of hair.
How does she know he has a man bun?
I don't know. Again, don't ask. But Hozier has a man bun.
Just read the book and
yeah,
enjoy it.
Yeah, she does eventually meet him.
You know.
So
oh, okay.
That you do see that, yes, he has a man bun.
Sit under a tree in the backyard and, yeah. read his book and have a good time.
It's a good romance. Mm-hmm. It's fun.
I have a recommendation myself. I want to do it real fast because my wife is reading this now and is loving this book. It's called The Emperor of Gladness by Ocean Vuong, who's an author that Chris Hickey tells me that she recognizes. It's his latest book. It's a novel about a young man who tries to commit suicide, and he is stopped by an elderly woman with dementia, and he becomes her caregiver. And it's apparently just this lovely, wonderful, different kind of romance, if you will. And my wife is loving this book. It's called The Emperor of Gladness by Ocean Vuong. We have 90 seconds left for Brian Lohr to give us one more children's book.
All right, one more. At the beginning of this year, I was in a horrible reading slump, and what brought me out of it was The Green Kingdom. It's an absolutely beautiful novel that was written by Cornelia Funke, co-written with Tammy Hartung. It's for ages 8 to 12. And it sets the main character, who's going to have to go over to Brooklyn, New York for a summer, doesn't want to do it at all, but she comes across, again, these secret letters come up again and again, at least for today. She comes across this stash of secret letters that were written between two sisters in the 1950s. Well, she comes across this in a furnished apartment that her parents have then.
And we're going to leave it there. Read the book, okay?
Read the book.
Give me the title one more time.
The Green Kingdom by Cornelia Funke and Tammy Hartung.
Thank you very much, Brian Lohr, from Cover to Cover. Thank you, Chris Hickey. The book festival is July?
July 12th and 13th, Saturday, Sunday.
At the Main Library downtown.
At the Main Library downtown.
Inside and outdoors.
Inside and outdoors.
And thank you, Cassie Rose. Your blog is thelongestchapter.com. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Chris Johnston, for making us radio. Thank you, Marcus Charleston, our producer. Thank you all for listening. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, the book show on 89.7 NPR News.